This podcast is brought to you by Money Control. Hello and welcome to Money Control. You're listening to In the News with me, Anvita Bansal. Today is Friday, January 10th, 2020, and I'll be bringing you all the latest updates from India and around the world. But before that, a small note on our Money Control app. The Money Control app has introduced a simple and efficient interface. Do download it and check it out now. On our first story, we discuss the Infosys Audit Committee finds no evidence of financial impropriety, executive misconduct. Following that, we'll discuss how Supreme Court today passed a series of orders directing the government to review its decisions on internet ban and imposing Section 144 in Kashmir. Later, we'll discuss the Supreme Court stays the NCLAT order reinstating Cyrus Mistry as Tata Sons executive chairman. The National Crime Records Bureau ranks Uttar Pradesh as the worst state for women's security. And lastly, we'll discuss U.S. House of Representatives' passed resolution to limit Donald Trump's ability to wage war on Iran. Infosys Audit Committee finds no evidence of financial impropriety, executive misconduct. To tell us more details on this, I have with me Money Control Siddhesh Rath. Hi Siddhesh, thank you for joining in.
Hi Anvita, thank you for having me here.
Siddhesh, what were the findings of the committee?
So the Audit Committee of Infosys found no evidence of any financial impropriety and executive misconduct as stated by a release that was put up on the exchanges. And they determined that the allegations were substantially without any merit. And this is with reference to an anonymous whistleblower complaint that the company had received on October 21st of 2019. On the basis of those whistleblower complaints, Audit Committee found that there was no breach of any treasury policy of the company, and it went on to say, and I quote, "The company strictly complied with its treasury policy without any interference or pressure from either the CEO or the CFO." And moving on to certain allegations of visa costs that were being tampered with, the audit committee went on to say that these visa cost allegations were unsubstantiated and they were appropriately accounted for. There were also allegations made over large deal approvals. And with regards to this, the committee also found them to be unsubstantiated. And I quote, "Large deals under the investigation team's review were approved by the necessary stakeholders. In the case of one large deal, a post facto approval was sought. The joint ventures were approved by the board and the audit committee. No evidence was found suggesting the CEO's involvement in bypassing the deal approval process or issuing any instructions in this regard." There were also many allegations about revenue recognitions of three large deals and joint ventures that the whistleblowers had mentioned in their earlier complaint in October of 2019. And the committee found those to be unsubstantiated as well.
Right.
One more important thing, Anvita, was that the whistleblowers had also pointed a finger at the CEO, Salil Parekh. And they said that he had been using the company's resources for his own private benefit. And the investigation concluded that all these allegations regarding the CEO's personal matter were, and I quote, "without merit," end quote. It went on to say, and I quote, "the CEO's bonus was computed by the finance and HR teams in accordance with the applicable company policies and his employee contract. Further, his bonus was paid after obtaining the approval of the Nomination and Remuneration Committee, or the NRC," end quote. So this is with reference to the fact that the whistleblowers had also raised allegations that the CEO was being remunerated on an inflated level. There were also some allegations concerning some investments that were alleged to have been made by CEO Salil Parekh, and the investment committee also went on to say that there was no evidence that was found of personal investments by the CEO in small companies in Mumbai.
Right. Siddhesh, the company has also released its Q3 numbers. Could you give us the details?
So Infosys has also released its Q3 numbers, and they have been positive. They have reported an 11% sequential growth for the third quarter, and it is an upward revision of the year's revenue guidance has also been put forward by the company. The profit for the quarter had also increased to 4,457 crores. This is greater than the 4,019 crore rupees that was achieved in the quarter previous to that. And its year-on-year growth was seen at 23.5%. And constant currency revenue for the quarter stood at 1% growth. The IT company has also revised its constant currency revenue guidance to 10 to 10.5%. Hmm. And this is a slight jump from the 9 to 10% it had put up earlier. And it's maintained its EBIT margin forecast at 21 to 23% for FY20.
Hmm.
The large deals, the deal wins rather for this quarter was at $1.8 billion. And this was lower than the $2.8 billion it had secured in the previous quarter.
The Supreme Court today has passed a series of orders directing the government to review its decisions on internet ban and imposing Section 144 in Kashmir. To give us more details on this, I have with me Money Control's Shraddha Sharma. Hi Shraddha, welcome to the show.
Hi Anvita.
Shraddha, what are the details? What are the series of orders that Supreme Court has given to the government?
So basically, crucial orders have come after the abrogation of Article 370 on August 5th. The court has said that the internet services are intrinsic to the right to free speech and cannot be suspended without providing reason and a duration.
Hmm.
So I'll just give you what all decisions came out of the verdict.
Right.
So the government has to review within 7 days all orders directing suspension of internet services.
Right.
The court also ordered that all the internet services in institutions providing essential services like hospitals, education centers, etc. needs to be restored.
Hmm.
And the Supreme Court also said that mere expression of dissent or disagreement against the government cannot be a reason for internet suspension.
Hmm.
So, in terms of that also, various like details they have given out, they have also said that the authorities, whatever the competent authorities will be, they will publish all orders in force.
Hmm.
This will be carried on for the future orders so that if there is any objection and people want to approach higher courts in terms of they need to apply for plea, they will be able to. So not all orders that were directed by the center were published. So Supreme Court has directed that everything needs to be published going forward.
Right.
And also they declared that freedom of speech and expression and the freedom to practice any profession or carry out any trade, all of this comes under Section 19(1)(a) and Article 19(1)(g). And the restriction upon such fundamental rights should be, you know, according to the restrictions laid down in Article 19(2) of the Constitution.
Hmm.
So in terms of internet also, they termed it a fundamental right that comes under that article.
All right.
So it was basically not done in the right way. Plus, there was no duration given out. Plus, there should be reason.
Hmm.
And dissent and protest are not reason enough. So the government has said basically it was in order to maintain law and order.
Hmm.
But here, Supreme Court actually tried to, you know, manage both liberty and security of the state. So in that sense, they put out the, you know, a verdict.
After the Supreme Court's orders, has there been any reaction from the government?
So basically, government had clarified that, you know, there was a ban only on the mobile internet services and most of the broadband services in terms of institutions with Wi-Fi, they were on.
Hmm.
It has been over 150 days, around 157, 158 days.
Right.
But the opposition has actually welcomed the Supreme Court verdict, saying that it was unconstitutional to, you know, impose such bans.
Hmm.
And also the power under Section 144, CRPC, it is only preventive and is exercisable only when there exists an actual danger.
Hmm.
Basically, the power under Section 144 cannot be used to suppress legitimate expression of opinion or grievance or exercise of any democratic rights.
Right.
So, in that sense, Section 144 can't be used. That is Assembly of People.
The Supreme Court stays the National Company Law Appellate Tribunal, NCLAT, order reinstating Cyrus Mistry as Tata Sons Executive Chairman. Sidesh, what were the reasons for the stay of the order?
So the Supreme Court had stayed the NCLAT order that had reinstated Cyrus Mistry as the executive chairman of Tata Sons because they observed certain, and I quote, lacunae in the orders that was passed by the tribunal.
Hmm.
Now, the top court had stated that the tribunal had seemed to, and I quote, committed errors in adjudicating and seems to lack powers to pass directions that it has and that it will have to hear the matter in detail.
Hmm.
So this order, rather this stay, was put on by a 3-judge bench, which comprised of Chief Justice S.A. Bobde and Justices B.R. Garwai and Surya Kant, where they said a very particular point that there was no prayer or there was no request from the Mistry side to reinstate Cyrus Mistry as the executive chairman, but the appellate tribunal, or rather the NCLAT, went ahead and did that anyhow. The Supreme Court also went on to say that the Tatas could not exercise power under Article 25 of the company law that would allow them to push out minority shareholders out of the company. The bench, however, had observed that Tata Sons, that the board of Tata Sons had not done that before, and that no effort was made to remove the Palunji group, or rather to get the Palunji group to dilute their shareholdings.
Siddesh, what were the arguments of both the camps?
So Tata Sons had challenged NCLAT's December 18 decision, and it was a big relief for Cyrus Mistry. However, the Mistry side was, during these proceedings, wanted to place a note about the interim arrangement, which was not accepted by the bench ultimately. And C.A. Sundaram, who was the senior advocate that was appearing for Mistry camp, submitted that instead of staying the NCLAT order, a notice should be issued and 2 weeks should be given to find a replacement in place of Mistry.
Yeah.
So, during the hearing, Sundaram had stated that he was not really pressing for any relief of the reinstatement of Mistry, but he was against the wrongful removal of Mistry from Tata. And he also placed the request of the Mistry camp that they would like a nominee from the Mistry camp to be present on the Tata Sons board.
Talking about our next story, the National Crime Records Bureau ranks Uttar Pradesh as the worst for women's security. Shraddha, what are the more details on this?
So, NCRB has put out all the crime numbers in terms of the different types of crimes, the assault on women, rapes, everything state-wise and area-wise. And it has revealed that Uttar Pradesh fared the worst among all states when it comes to security for women. Next in line is Madhya Pradesh. So two of the major states in the Hindi heartland fared the worst.
Right.
So according to the NCRB report, 3.78 lakh cases of crime against women were reported in 2018. Out of this, in Uttar Pradesh, over 59,000 cases were registered, which is the most number of cases.
Right.
The state also topped the list in 2017. So for two consecutive years, we are seeing the highest rate of crime against women for 2 years. The maximum number of rapes, that is 5,450, that is almost 15 rapes a day, were reported in Madhya Pradesh.
Right. So Shraddha, which states may be safe for women in list according to the National Crime Records Bureau?
So based on state-wise data, Arunachal Pradesh, Goa, Himachal Pradesh, most of the northeastern states, Manipur, Meghalaya, Sikkim, Tripura, can be seen as moderately safer than other states, as they recorded the lower number of cases that are actually reported.
Right.
So it's out of the reported number of cases.
Shraddha, where does our national capital stand in the list?
So among the union territories, Delhi actually led with a recorded number of 15,300 cases of crime against women in 2018, compared to around 13,000 in 2017 and 13,600 above that in 2016. So across the country in 2018, we have seen that cruelty by husband or his relatives accounted for most number of cases, that is around over 100,000 cases.
Well, I guess more than government measures, we need to change people's mindset in the society to decrease crime against women. Thank you so much, Shraddha, for all those details.
Thank you, Anvita, for having me.
All right. On our last story, we discuss how the U.S. House of Representatives passes resolution to limit Donald Trump's ability to wage war on Iran. Siddesh, what is the stance of both the parties involved?
So the U.S. House of Representatives is equivalent to the Lok Sabha in India. And it is primarily controlled by the opposition party, which is the Democrats. And they have passed a law to stop President Donald Trump from carrying out further military action against Iran.
Right.
They went on to rebuke the president days after he had gone ahead and ordered a strike, which killed a top Iranian military commander, that was Qasem Soleimani. They had accused Trump of acting recklessly and they had backed Trump's resolution. The Republicans, which is the current party in the order, had obviously opposed this rule. And I'll just quote from some representatives that were present in the House.
This is, and
I'll be quoting Representative Elliot Engel, who is the chairman of the House of Foreign Affairs Committee. And he said, and I quote, "The president has to make the case first, not after he launches an ill-advised attack and then comes up with a reason why it was necessary and why it was legal." So this is, again, an opposing view against President Trump's move. And Republicans, on the other hand, felt that they would be endangering the president's ability to carry out decisions in times of crisis. And I will be quoting one senior Republican, Mike McCall, and I quote, "Instead of supporting the president, my Democrat colleagues are dividing Americans at a critical time," unquote. He said that this resolution would, and I quote, "tie the president's hands," unquote. Now, the government, the White House, which is the official White House statement, has also criticized the resolution's passing. And they called it, and I quote, "a ridiculous and just another political move," unquote.
Right. Would the resolution likely be passed?
So, Anvita, the resolution would have to now be scrutinized by the upper house, which is called the House of the Senate.
Okay.
Now, this is a Republican Party dominated house. So, you have 53 people out of the 100 people in the Senate who are from the Republican Party. So, majority is definitely on the Republican Party side. And it will be a little difficult for the bill to be passed through. But that is why the fate of this resolution is a little uncertain in the Senate. Nonetheless, it was reported that at least two Republican senators, right, they have expressed support for the measure. So it is only time will tell whether such a resolution could be passed.
Right. We can only hope that war doesn't take place. Thank you so much, Sadesh, for all those insights.
Thank you so much, Anvita.
Well, with that, it's a wrap on this edition of In the News. In case if you have any queries or suggestions for us, please do write to us on mcpodcast@nw18.com. Until then, it's me, Anvita, signing off. For more news, views and updates, please stay logged on to moneycontrol.com. Thank you so much for listening and have a great weekend.